Good evening, everyone. We're back for another show of Radio Migrante here on CHRY 105.5 FM. You can also listen to us on Rogers Cable 945 or online at www.chry.fm. So here with us in the studio tonight, we are actually having a party of of sorts. We've got Rhea.
Hello, everyone. Good evening to all the listeners of 105.5's Radio Migrante.
And we have our usual hosts, Alex and Marco, in the studio.
Hello.
Yeah, Marco's backing off here. I don't know. I feel some nervousness about today's topic here, Marco. What are we talking? Oh, wait, we have one more guest.
And
as well.
We have a guest. We have Charm Torres.
Hello.
He's one of our guests tonight. And we'll also have on the phone Cynthia Palmaria later in the show. We've also got other folks outside, Yimi and Bayani. So it's really a full house. But tonight's show is, if some of you have seen have been on our Facebook page and seen the event for tonight's show, it's Feminism and the Filipina. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about feminism as a child of the diaspora, you know, violence against women, exploitation and farming of Filipino caregivers, gender, queer, trans, visibility and inclusion in Filipino communities. But I guess we'll also be answering very basic questions before we get into all of that. What is feminism and is it still relevant? And how is it relevant to us as Filipinas? So if you have any questions or if you have any comments, you can join us on the show by calling us. We'll be opening the phone lines around 9:40. You can phone in at 416-736-5656. So we'll take calls after 9:40. And we're also online. You can write your questions or comments on our event page on Facebook. Just search for Feminism and the Filipina on Radio Migrante.
Just before we move on, we have some shout-outs here to Mr. Stanley Tarrant of Kitchener. Hi, my dear stepfather, and also my mom is also listening right now. And we also want to greet the Cruz family, and hello, Marcel from Ninong Bayani, Rodriguez family, and hello, Jacob from Ninong Bayani as well.
It's family show. It's not just it's not just a show on feminism.
It's an odd show today. There's so many people. What's going on? There's so many people.
So feminism, the F word, the other F word sometimes. Let's just, I don't know, just get people's ideas on this word, because for some people it has a negative connotations. For others it's just, you know, a regular word. What is feminism?
I think I can answer that question. For me, as on my own perspective, feminism is something that we have been doing in the past. Ever since the midst of Spanish colonization, we have been fighting for women's liberation rights and truly for a genuine national democracy. And women in the Philippines have been discriminated and abused, violated and repressed in different ways. So we have been struggling to obtain justice, and we were expecting that, of course, the Philippine government would really help us, but and would also fight for us to obtain these rights and justice that we have been pushing through these years. But however, they are the ones who abuse us, violate our rights, and stress the point that we're only women and we must subject ourselves to men. And this is something we must change for the women of today and tomorrow. And that's my own perspective of feminism.
What do the others have to say about it? I mean, that was already a very, I guess, very loaded definition, or mm-hmm. it opens up a lot of questions already about mm-hmm. what exactly is feminism and different points of view on it. What do others think?
All right, so this is Charm on the mic. I just want to say thanks so much, guys, for inviting me. I love community radio. It's so grassroots and it's so amazing to be in this space. So first of all, before I say anything, I just want to put on the table my privileges. And this is really important for me whenever I'm speaking, because it just highlights what lens I'm speaking from, what perspectives I'm able to gain. And so my privileges are, so I am cisgendered, so that CIS. What that means is that I am not of a transgendered experience. It's important for me to name that because, you know, we live in a world where cisgenderedness is sort of considered the norm. I'm also able-bodied, I'm housed, I speak English fluently, and I have status in Canada. So when I'm speaking, I'm mostly speaking from my experience. I'm not an academic, and I hope that my language is accessible for people. So when I think of the F word, by the way, I love that, the F word, feminism. There's two things that stand out for me. So one of them is the, you know, striving for gender equality. And the second one, which is sort of our main theme for the night, is how this intersects with my racialized identity, which is being a Filipina. So, yes, I identify as a feminist, and it's true. When you talk about feminism, people have many definitions of what it means to be a feminist and what's a feminist supposed to look like and how we're supposed to act. So I feel like how I pursue and define feminism is probably very different for some people and may not be relevant to them, but probably some of my experiences also overlap to some folks. So I want to quote a black feminist author, Bell Hooks, and this is what she has to say about visionary feminism. Is, to me, this does not mean that we must approach feminism from the same perspective. It does mean that we have a basis for communication, that our actual political commitments should lead us to talk and struggle together, which is sort of what we're doing today.
What, are you looking at me? What do you want to say? You're looking at me, Mitch.
No, I'm looking at you. I want to ask you, because we've heard from the sisters. Mm-hmm. And I think it's
and we all know why Marco stepped away from the mic. But yeah. I agree with everything you have said. So I don't think there's really that much I have to add. Like when I was growing up, when I was in university, I did self-identify as a feminist. And for me, mm-hmm. feminism was, you know, the base level of it has always been gender equality. Mm-hmm. And it's as I got older from university, as I got older, I actually came to realize that there were more layers to it than simple equality. Because equality really, it depends different things depending on what you're talking about, right? It means different things depending on what you're talking about. Because we can see, like, I think for feminism, being Filipinos, it's one of the most obvious examples of where there's a conflict is the Living Caregiver Program, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the Canadian white feminist movement that's fighting for work equality, which has, you know, had a lot of great successes in the last few decades. But as white women have been entering the workforce, we do see that it opened a gap, because now they're not at home, and who's going to take care of the kids? There's no national child care system. So what happened is you have like these mostly Filipino women, though it did start off as Jamaican women, and then now it's mostly Filipino women that are taking over in the Living Caregiver Program. So you can see that it's not as simple as equality. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is as simple as equality, but equality means different things depending on the context.
And so Charm already mentioned different aspects of her, you know, you mentioned different aspects of your identity, mm-hmm. as a woman, but also as a racialized woman. Like, how do these different aspects of your identity shape your struggle or your particular brand of mm-hmm. feminism?
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of how I pursue feminism, it's, I'm a queer woman, so that plays a lot of role in terms of how I pursue feminism, and, you know, it's still very relevant, because, as Alex was saying, we really do not have gender equality. It sounds really bold, but that's my truth. And I also want to make it clear, when I speak of gender, I speak of all genders. So I believe to be a feminist, one must really walk away from the gender binary of what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman and the limiting definitions of that. So it is worth looking at male privilege. But again, that's also the same system that silences and invisibilizes genders that cannot be comfortably placed in the binary of man and woman. So to be a feminist, I think one must really align themselves against heterosexism and cissexism. And what I mean by that is like upholding, you know, being straight and being your gender identity aligned to the gender you're assigned at birth. So for me, I was born with like bio-female body parts, and I also identify as female. So that in our culture, that's sort of upheld as the norm, quote unquote. So to be a feminist, I also want to acknowledge and give voice and, you know, realness and the presence of queer and trans people. And it's important not to equate, you know, gender identity and gender expression and sexual orientation as synonymous entities. They're not. And you know, if someone's putting me in a box in terms of what womanhood looks like, that I should be wearing a skirt, I should have long hair, I should have a boyfriend, then that's really oppressive, and that's not what what feminism is to me. Because I believe we all lie within the spectrum of gender and the many expressions. So for me, how I express my gender is of a femme expression, and it's really taken a lot of work, a lot of money in therapy to reconcile and negotiate this identity as something that I have chosen. Whereas, really, I was brought up and this identity was really pushed onto me. I was brought up as a girl. I had resources as a girl. My parents, society, everywhere, that's sort of what they pushed onto me. And so yeah, my socialization informed my gender identity and expression. It just comfortably fit in the binary. And so it's just, to me, my work is to really unpack that and like unlearn these.
And that's really just an introduction to the show. So I'm going to take a short break because we have to do the commercial thing. But for all our listeners, so we're talking about feminism. We're talking about what feminism means to Filipina women. And so, you know, if you have any comments, please just log on to the Facebook page. You can type them out there, and we'll also be taking phone calls later on in the show.
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
And we're back. This is Radio Migrante, and we are talking today about feminism and the Filipina. So, Mithy Esquera, lead us in here.
All right. So, we've heard from one of our guests, Charm Torres, who, sorry, I forgot to do the proper introduction earlier, but some background info about Charm. Charm is a queer immigrant Filipina and a registered nurse practicing LGBTQ primary care. Her nursing care is founded and guided by philosophies of anti-oppression, pro-choice philosophies, social justice and feminism, and she's been doing anti-oppression focused on nursing and activism during her whole 10 years in Canada. She's remained committed in practicing and continuing her nursing work in the community as opposed to mainstream hospital care systems. She was previously a sexual assault and domestic violence nurse examiner and a sexual and reproductive health counselor. So there's a wealth of experience in our guest here, and this is where her, you know, her views are coming from, her personal and also from work experience.
And sorry, I actually just want to add, I haven't stepped in York University grounds at night, and when I used to work at the Sexual Assault Center, I did have a lot of like victims and survivors coming who are York University students or around York University grounds that were assaulted in the grounds, and I must say, I'm not surprised now. It is so dark. And this is a shout out to the university. Put some bright lampposts so that there's brightness. And like at Ryerson University, for example, there are those little like phone where people
can
call,
push,
security.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that. And even the halls within the building is dark. I just noticed
York's been having a lot of trouble with this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been following. It's even hit the mainstream news, right?
Wow. Well, yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I'm not.
But CHRY is great. Moving on.
So we've heard from Charm.
Hey, we like the station. We gotta get something. Come on.
We've heard from Charm speaking about how being a racialized person and a queer person are two integral parts of her struggle as a woman. Now, and this is coming from her experiences in the Canadian context. So we have our other guests on the phone right now. This is Cynthia Palmaria, the chairperson of the newly formed Gabriela Ontario. They just had their founding general assembly yesterday.
Woo-hoo! Gabriela Ontario!
And this is, you know, this is the product of a couple of years of organizing even before this group was officially formed. So Gabriela is a Filipino women's mass organization which seeks to extend the National Democratic Women's Movement from the Philippines to Canada. Cynthia, can you
greet
our guests? Hi.
Good evening, everyone, and to all the listeners of Radio Migrante.
So we were talking, as our initial opening question, we were talking about what our own personal ideas of feminism are. As somebody from Gabriela, Ontario, what does feminism mean?
And maybe
in the Philippine
could
context?
I ask an addition to this, just so we can move on a little bit for some of the other questions. Maybe you could frame this in the framework of feminism in the Philippines. So, what does feminism mean to you? And as a representative of Gabriela Philippines, how do you think feminism in the Philippines is? Like, and how is it perhaps different, or is it even different in the Philippines relative to here?
Well, I guess I'll start with the similarities, looking at, say, feminism here and feminism in the Philippines, because they're both have very specific concerns, which is looking at advocating women's rights and equality. So in that way, there's that similarity. But I guess the difference is when it comes to the Philippine context is that we call it more of a women's movement instead of feminism, because I guess what we're trying to look at here is not just the issue of gender oppression, you know, men versus women, but more so it's the it's also looking at the women's movement being a part of the broader people's movement. Because, well, when we look at the roots of women's oppression, it is the you know, the Philippine society with the foreign domination of the U.S. imperialists that has perpetuated, well, in over the last few centuries, this culture of women's oppression. So I guess we're looking at the context of the within the Philippine society, and that's why we see it as part of the women's movement, is part of the national democratic movement of the Filipino people. Yeah, so basically that's it in a nutshell. Like, that's, I guess, what the difference is.
Yeah, I think it's quite similar to what Rhea was talking about earlier, about how, you know, the struggle for women's liberation is something that Filipino women have been waging since Spanish colonization into the present day. Maybe I don't know, right now, what are the issues which are most prominent or which are most important for women in the Philippines?
I think it's unfortunately, when it comes to the women's issues, it still goes back to the basic, like when it comes to women's reproductive rights, you know, women's health, for example, right? 1 out of 10 still die from giving birth, which doesn't happen in the North American society. But a lot of the aside from the women's rights issues and the women's equality issues that we're dealing with, for example, right now in the Philippines, the women's struggle is still rooted to the exploitation, women's exploitation, the women's oppression, which is also experienced by majority of the Filipino people. Like, you know, when the oil when there's an oil price hike, the commodity and everything else, the price of everything goes up. And so it's the woman who's taking care of the family who bears the brunt of, you know, how would her family survive. So, and that's why you can see that their issues is not separated from the Filipino masses, because they end up taking care of surviving the family. So it's like basically right now we're looking at basic survival issues of the women apart from the women's equality, their women's rights, reproductive rights, and all that, which is still existing in the Philippines as part of the women's struggle.
Cynthia, you just mentioned about the reproductive health. We just got a recent news from the Philippines that the Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines, or CBCP, has charged the Gabriela Women's Party of allegedly admitting that the reproductive health, or the RH bill, pending in both chambers and Congress, is neither pro-poor nor pro-women. What is your perspective about this?
That it's... I guess it's been an ongoing debate, this whole population, this RH bill that the Gabriela Women's Party List has been struggling with. Basically, what it is that the Gabriela Women's Party is trying to put forward the women's rights to decide control over their body. And I guess this is something that we're still trying to grasp as a struggle of the women in the Philippines. So it's still something that we're trying to discuss, deal with the women here. And Yeah, it's still ongoing. We still need to study these issues that the Gabriela Women's Park List is putting forward.
I just have a question, Ate Cynthia. Hi, it's Charm.
Oh, hi.
I don't know much about, like, I guess, the reproductive health bill in the Philippines. My question is, for example, the morning after pill, is that something that's available for people in the Philippines to purchase? And Alex is nodding his head no.
No, it's funny because, you know, being a Catholic country, right?
Yeah, even condoms
are like a big no-no for when it comes to the Catholic Church. And so, which doesn't... Yeah, it basically is difficult for the women to have control over there.
But we can bring up there's a bit of a conflict there as well, because if you go to Capo Church in Manila, right outside Capo Church, they do still sell the herbal remedies, quote-unquote, for abortions, right? The pamparegla you can buy right outside the church, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I heard, I don't know if this is true, but it's crazy enough that I kind of believe it. I heard that Quiapo Church is also the place where women who have had these backroom abortions actually leave their unborn child. Because, I don't know, again, I don't know if this is true. I heard this is a rumor. So I don't know if I should even be spreading it. But it was just so crazy that I almost believe it.
But I mean, I was born and raised in the Philippines, and I grew up in like a really hardcore Catholic school, and I did not receive any sex education, and the kind of sex education I remember, and I still remember it. And
this is here in Canada,
in the Philippines, when I was like 14. And you know, right now I'm still thinking like I should probably write my old school a letter and send them an invoice of my therapy bills. But basically, this is what they did. They grouped all of us 14-year-olds, like over 200 students, at a big auditorium, and they showed like really, really graphic, and I still have the images in my head of like graphic abortions, and it's just so anti-choice and very shaming of women's bodies and women's choices. And that's the kind of message I was born and taught, like, in the Philippines.
And what Charm saying is actually true, because of that lack of education. And women don't have that control over their reproductive rights. And even it's entrenched in society that there's no support, like health support, for the women. And so, you know, unwanted pregnancies and all that, they have end up resorting to these, you know, back alley kind of a resolution to these unwanted pregnancies.
I mean, it's the only way they can really fight that.
Right, and even wanted pregnancies, right? The you know, women die from giving birth because they have no access to regular health care for giving birth. And so that's one of the things that, you know, the Orange Bill is trying to put forward, that general health care should be available to women, especially the women in rural areas. Right, because otherwise they just end up dying from a normal process of giving birth, which shouldn't happen in the first place.
And I think this is really good for everyone here in Canada to know that, in terms of, I mean, you know, there's. We have privileges here with in terms of our choice in reproduction, even though, you know, the Stephen Harper government is trying to mess with that as well. But it's, yeah, in the Philippines, they don't even have the basic reproductive rights that we have here in Canada.
And I think that's a good segue to step back and give this some context, because, you know, I love my history bits. So I'm going to give a short little history bit about, let's keep in mind how this all got to be, right? Because the Philippines is really ripe with contradictions, especially, and women's issues. Feminism is actually a great example, because if you look at our pre-colonized history, women had a very strong place in society, right? It was a virtual matrilinear society. Inheritance was passed down through the woman. And there was also a great respect for queer people as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we recall, the babaylan, the shamans, were always the people that were what's called in Canada two-spirited.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very similar concept there. I don't know if they use the term two-spirited, but it's the same thing. We can see how this has a weird effect actually today, where in terms of queer issues, you have a society where it's okay to be openly male gay in terms of how you act, but you can't have sex with a man. Females, however, different story. But and also in terms of women, so the Philippines to me was always curious. On my first time, I didn't go back till 2001, but when I did go back, I did notice a lot of interesting things that weren't normal for me coming from Canada, in the fact that you could see women in so many roles of leadership. Let's not forget that despite the problems in the Philippines, we've had two female presidents, right?
Right.
That were elected by the rich people, but even then, it was still elected by the people. So you can see that there's an openness of sorts, a weird contradiction between what was taught to us post-colonial mm-hmm. and what happened before. And you can see that in terms of the progressive movement, so many progressive leaders in so many of the movements, not just Gabriela, which is the women's progressive movement, but the other ones as well. Migrantes is led by women, for example. So you have all these progressive movements with female leaders. And I actually just Googled something really quickly because I remembered this being a case. But if in 2011, in the global gender gap rankings made by the World Economic Forum, the Philippines actually ranks 8th of 135 countries for female CEOs. So there's this weird sort of thing happening there. So we're just, so our listeners who are listening in, you know, sometimes we fall into this trap of, oh, it's so backwards in other countries, where, you know, there are, let's not deny, there are backwards elements in the Philippines, but it's not clear. It's not easy. It's not, the Philippines is not as progressive as Canada, because in some ways it's more. But in other ways, not really.
Right.
And back to you. That is your history segment for the day.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, I just wanted to comment on what Alex said about the Philippines having two female presidents, which, you know, if you were to, you know, just quickly look at it, you would say that, oh, okay, so they're, you know, pro-women and women's rights and all that and equality. But I think one of the lessons in Philippine history when it comes to the women's movement is that although women all across classes are suffering from gender oppression from their male partners and all that, we cannot forget the fact that there's still that class oppression all across the different classes of women. And so, for example, when we see, you know, Aquino, right, Cory Aquino, you can see how even when she came into power, the women's movement thought that, yeah, it's going to be a female president, so she's going to fight for women's equality and women's rights, when in fact, you know, she was the one who turned against the women, and all the bills that she came up with were basically anti-women. And so, yeah, we just have to be, you know, mindful of the fact that even if we're talking of women's oppression and women's oppression, we cannot forget the fact that there's the class that overrides that gender oppression.
And contradictions abound.
Yeah, and I think even, yeah, just to add, our most recent female president, President Macapagal Arroyo, I've read a quote around her where she said, "My values are that of the Catholic Church," and this ties in with, yeah, just the lack of reproductive rights that women have in the Philippines. And I think this also speaks a lot about how even when we have visibly, you know, female-looking leaders, it doesn't really mean that they necessarily are pro-women. And what that means is that women, women can also contribute to the same sort of patriarchal, misogynist agenda, right? Like of male privilege and sort of anti-women stuff.
So we're hearing Cynthia talking about class being a bigger issue among women in the Philippines. Like you said before, we were talking about the RH bill and how reproductive health, sexual health is something which is an important issue for women in the Philippines. It's the same here, but because of the more pronounced class differences in the Philippines, it's more difficult for women to access those resources. And Cynthia was also talking earlier about how other issues such as basic survival is one big issue for women in the Philippines. So I think that's one difference that we're seeing between the two movements. And I guess maybe the other thing which we've mentioned several times in the show is when it comes to, there's that contradiction between classes in the Philippines and there are women who are advocates of the marginalized sectors. What are the experiences of these women, Cynthia? Maybe you can talk about that, because I know that we have some Migrante has some guests coming from the Philippines next month, and these are women who are human rights advocates and have experienced a lot of repression from the government. Can you talk a bit about that?
I guess when we're looking at the repression, just wanted to make to be clear the question. Wanted to see the oppression of the women that's perpetuated by the state.
Yes. Political repression.
Yes, and looking at the, I guess one of the campaigns that we had here in Canada with Migrante, and looking at the state oppression, we have this guest that's coming from the Philippines, and Angie Ipoh, who was actually she was a missionary in the southern part of the Philippines, and basically what happened was she was arrested and detained during Women's Day 6 years ago because of, you know, how she was serving the people as a missionary down south. So just because of doing voluntary service to the people, I guess it's a part of a revelation of how useless the Philippine government is when it comes to serving the basic needs of the people. And so it just reveals the incapacity of the Philippine state serving the people. And so in the end, Angie Ipoh was imprisoned, and for 6 years she was being held by international by the international community, the progressive organizations in the Philippines, to be released. And so when we were I went to the Philippines in July 2011 last year, and part of the victory that we celebrated was the fact that because of the pressure from the international forces and in the Philippines, Angie Ipoh was released. And so we were able to join her in the conference last year, and she's coming. This March to talk about the human rights violation and all that. And so this will be a big lesson for us. But she's one of the fortunate ones who was able to be freed in spite of, you know, the oppression that the Philippine state is perpetuating. But there are a lot of other women who are basically a lot of leaders, women leaders from Gabriela, who suffered and were killed by the, you know, the Philippine government goons, unfortunately, in front of their families and all that. So it's still ongoing. Human rights violation, it's still ongoing under the Noynoy Aquino administration.
Mm. And this is why, as feminists and as immigrants in Canada, it's important that we do our work here, not to separate them, because it's very connected how we are here and what's going on in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, I think, important to keep that in mind in terms of, you know, sometimes I hear in the progressive circles here in Toronto that, you know, we can't talk about class, or we can't talk about race, or we can't talk about these things with other issues, for example, with women's issues. And I think that's a foolish thing to separate these things, because they're really linked together,
yeah.
Right? Like, you can't talk about women's issues or race issues and not take into account the fact that, you know, we live in a capitalist system, and within a capitalist system, racism and sexism just make sense.
Yeah, and I think people might be forgetting that in the beginning of, like, you know, quote-unquote women's liberation movement, a lot of, in North America, it was within white women context, mm-hmm. and with lots of class privilege. Mm-hmm. And so the people of color got lost in that, in terms of, like, well, how does that apply to us as non-white people, right? So race, class, and gender are very important things to talk about in feminism.
Right, and I guess when we look at, again, going back to, let's say, the Philippine society of Filipinos here in Canada, we always look back to, you know, the roots of the Filipino women's oppression, which is, again, entrenched into that, you know, the U.S. imperialism that has that's influencing the Philippine society. And so through the National Democratic Movement, we're able to emancipate the women from the different layers of oppression, starting with the male oppression and then the class oppression. And then the third layer of that will be the foreign domination and exploitation by the U.S. imperialists.
Okay, Ate Cynthia, I will be asking you a question, but you will answer this after the commercial. So I'm just actually reading the Gabriela Experience release. It's titled The Fight Against Violence on Women in the Philippines. And it says here, quote, unquote, women now also become direct targets of political violence through summary execution. Since the regime of President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, 16 women have become victims of summary executions by suspected military men or their assets. What is going on, or what is the status of the 16 women nowadays?
Oh, you're happy we're going to commercial now, yeah? So think this over. We'll be back after about 3 minutes. You've been listening to Radio Migrante on CHRY 105.5 FM.
This is CHRY 105.5 FM.
We're back on Radio Migrante at CHRY 105.5 FM, and we're talking about feminism and the Filipina, and we're having a discussion with our guests, Charm Torres and Cynthia Palmaria. And just before the break, Rhea asked a question for Cynthia about the status of women political prisoners in the Philippines.
Yes, and basically, I think that this is an attempt. Like, all these convictions of women who are leaders of or organizers within the women's movement in the Philippines who are being convicted and are being imprisoned are basically trumped-up charges, which is an attempt of the Philippine government to suppress the leaders from, you know, continuing to organize the women in their different communities and the different workplaces, whether it's in the church or in their organizations in their different professions. They just continue to try to do that so that they think that they'll be able to suppress the movement. But then what they don't realize is that, you know, in spite of what they're doing, the women's movement and the people's movement are continuing to organize and to reveal their plots of keeping up with these trumped-up charges in order to suppress the movement. And so they might have them in prison, but it doesn't mean that it has stopped the movement from growing. So we're still trying to put pressure on the government fighting for their cases, but it's important that we get the support of, you know, the different organizations within the Philippines, the international movement, and so education is a very big part of it, to educate the masses of what the Philippine government is doing, suppressing the people.
Okay, so we have all these different issues in the Philippines. There's you just talked about the political repression. We're talking about economic survival, reproductive health, and even healthcare and social services in general that women are facing. And then we have, for Filipino Canadian women, there's also the issue of you know, their racialized identities as Filipino women, which we can see links back to the roots of why there is a diaspora of Filipino people, why Filipinos are here in Canada and many other parts of the world, mm-hmm. that are you know, influencing their racialized identities. But a question I'd like to pose is, how do we reconcile all of this? Because as Filipinas living in Canada, these are all things which are important to us because they are all linked together. Mm-hmm. And I know that Charm maybe has some questions and has some insights into this as well.
I mean, I think before coming to Canada, I've never really had to identify as a Filipino person, right? Like, I feel like this otherization and racialization that happens it happens concurrently with immigration. And it's a given that as a young person coming to Canada, I didn't think that those are things that I need to, you know, negotiate and reconcile within my own stuff. So it's really big. And so for me, like, now it's really important for me to be able to really merge a lot of my identities you know, my identities as a queer woman, as a Filipino woman, as a woman. Those are identities that are very well connected, and that And it's very important. And, you know, being in this space, actually, I feel very, very hopeful. It feels really good to be in a space with my Filipino people. I mean, I was talking to you guys before we planned for this. I mean, I'm an empowered person, so I have that privilege to be able to go out into the community and seek out spaces that feel safe for me. And I recognize that not a lot of people have these choices. So, you know, at the same time, I still found there was a disconnect. Like, I found, like, in Filipino communities, there's still a lot of heteronormativeness. As a, you know, person of queer identity, I felt like my radical gender politics are lost. And so wherever I turn, I felt like, you know, in the queer community in Toronto, it's so amazing. It's so organized. There's amazing people of color, but I'm not meeting a lot of Filipino people. And so I'm feeling like where are the queer Filipinos? And then I go to Filipino spaces. There's not enough sort of queer solidarity that happens. Queer and trans solidarity that happens. So I find, like, in terms of my own reflection, is that I'm trying to bridge that gap for me of where can I find a space that I, you know, like, just embraces my queerness and, like, my Filipino-ness, basically. It's hard.
I think what Charm is saying, we need to talk. We need to educate each other about each of our specific issues, right? Creating support for each other, whether it's specific women's issues, queer issues. And along with that, we need to look back into our history and you know, from there, study how it all came about and why we're in this situation. And so that we'll be able to root deeper into our history, what caused this and what's perpetuated all these different, you know, the segregation and of women. And so I think creating a circle, a safe space for women, for queer, I think Gabriella would be one of a space where we can start discussing these issues and relate that into the history and how we can work together towards a common goal.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
I can add a little bit to this as well. Like, we were talking about this yesterday when we were prepping for the show, and I think Marco, who's sitting back there, had a point that when we really look at a lot of the Filipino organizations that are here in Toronto, we don't even have to look at queer issues. You just look at progressive issues, period, right? Mm-hmm. It's not really touched upon, and I think a lot of that comes down to what we were talking about before, which is the class issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that a lot of the Filipinos, all Filipinos that come here are escaping, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this issue that's really common, that we're escaping the problems in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So we're here, we're not gonna rock the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're not gonna do anything that's gonna get us in trouble. And this is inclusive of all progressive issues, but when it comes to queer issues, it adds an extra layer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's got the layer of women, it's got the progressive layer, then it's got the women's layer, and then it's got the queer issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that's a trifecta of I don't wanna touch it.
Yeah. Right? And it's deep in the layer in the way you said it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I really want to encourage what Cynthia was saying there as well, because this is an issue even within the progressive community, that we're brought up in a Catholic country.
Yeah.
Even if we were raised here, we're brought up in this way.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need to start talking about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we really need to start making sure that these issues are heard. And that's why we're happy that you're here.
Yay!
And we're happy that, you know, take part of other things and lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need a leader that to talk about these issues.
Yeah, no, so. Thanks so much for giving me the platform to speak about these things, because these are, you know, queer and trans issues in the Filipino community is what I found that was lacking. And so I just took it upon myself to start talking then.